I'm a PhD candidate at the University of South Carolina at Columbia. The project I'm going to speak to you about this morning is actually a mixed method study. We had a formative phase and also a quantitative phase, a pilot study rather, that I'm going to talk about. And it had several aims, so I'm going to move around just a little bit in this presentation, and I will try not to get you too confused this morning, but the presentation is going to focus on, even though we use this opportunity to teach men and women more about prostate cancer and find out more about informed decision making, we also use this opportunity to find out about the perceptions and barriers of clinical trials participation amongst African Americans in the city of Spartanburg, South Carolina. So, I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, so African Americans are more likely to develop and die from cancer. However, they have some of the lowest participation in clinical trials. And actually, NCI has pushed for years, over decades, trying to increase the number of African Americans in clinical trials because there's so much that we need to know about this particular population. But, you know, we're having a bit of trouble, you know, getting them to participate. And that's for several reasons. And right now they represent less than 10% of the participants in NCI-funded trials. And actually a lot of these barriers that I'm going to talk about will apply to basic medical research or research studies that we're carrying out. I don't know who in here is stellar with recruitment, but I know each and every study, I'm very excited about approaching the recruitment process, but it's also usually very, very tedious. Okay, so some of the barriers that we found throughout the literature that is hindering African-American participation are at several levels. So the patient level, you have things such as mistrust, which will come up a lot. We've had studies such as the Tuskegee experiment, and I've seen that in someone's presentation earlier. Fear, you have things at the provider level, such as the provider's lack of awareness that the trial is even going on. So how can you expect them to tell the patient when they don't know? Some doctors are not, you know, really concerned about the study. They aren't invested, so they aren't going to refer their particular patients to your study. And also things such as the system level. They may not have the resources necessary, so they may not have the administrative assistance to support your particular study. So remember those patient, provider, and systems levels barriers. Now I jump to prostate cancer because I don't know if you guys know much about the environment of prostate cancer, but this is pretty much the nucleus of our study, is we really wanted to explore how men and women were really going about making decisions, not the women, of course, women don't have prostates, but the women have a very influential role in the decision-making of men and the decision-making of, you know, men going to the doctor, finding health information, and so forth. So this is one of the other aims of our study. But like you said, this morning I'll be focusing really on the clinical trials perceptions. But I think this is really, really important, especially as it relates to, you know, recruiting people for these types of studies. But prostate cancer, it affects, you know, over 240,000 men per year. But, of course, the level is a lot higher in African-American men. And this disparity between European American men and African American men is about 50% more extreme, which is hence why we wanted to create an intervention to really, you know, find out how people were making informed decisions or if they were making informed decisions about prostate cancer screening. But in the process, we also wanted to know, okay, what's keeping people from participating in medical research as well as clinical trials? So let me... And the reason that that prostate cancer is so controversial right now is that, like, if you think about colonoscopy or mammograms, it is a clear guideline saying that, yes, you should go get screened. Unfortunately, that's not the case with prostate cancer. There's been a huge controversy about whether or not men should get screened for prostate cancer. Right now, the United States Preventive Services Task Force is saying healthy men should not be screened for prostate cancer. where as the American Cancer Society is saying, yes, men should have a chance to make an informed decision with their doctor about whether or not to be screened. However, the screening guidelines are based on two larger studies. One is European and one U.S. study. One study resulted in inconclusive results about whether screening is effective. The other one said that it was leading to more overtreatment and overdiagnosis. So let me tie this together a little bit, how prostate cancer even ties into this clinical trials. So let me get to the next slide. So the importance of finding out about, you know, clinical trials perception and even participation in educational programs is to basically find out how to overcome these barriers. And by overcoming these barriers, we can find out how people are making decisions about prostate cancer screening and other health issues. And, you know, we can find out, we can gain knowledge about a particular health condition, such as prostate cancer. And it can also help us discover new cancer prevention and treatment solutions. So the overall purpose of the study, or this particular aim, was to assess African-American men and women's knowledge of participation in and participation in cancer-related clinical research and barriers and motivations for participating in clinical research. So we had 81 men and women. Again, the reason we included women in our study is because women are used, we found that women were usually the decision makers in the household about several several health behaviors, such as going to the doctor. And they also found health information for the men. These were typically the people who, you know, kind of controlled the men. And so we conducted 22 focus groups in our formative phase. And we transcribed the audio files, organizing them into in vivo and examined the reoccurring themes. So that was the formative phase. 56 of these participants decided to continue on with us and participated in our intervention, which was a four-week session of education, and we held sessions in one-week intervals. And participants were asked to complete a survey, and 39 of our questions were related to knowledge, perceptions, and behaviors. So, let me talk a little bit more about this formative phase. So we also use this formative phase of this study to find out more about, you know, what type of knowledge that these people had. What do you know? What do you want to know? How are you making decisions? How can we help you? So this process was almost like a collaboration between us and the community to produce the best intervention possible. And then after that, we had a second phase, pre and post test, where we found out how effective this intervention is, so we can move forward, you know, with implementing this intervention on a larger level. But what we found in the formative phase, I think the themes fell into three areas. So knowledge, participation, and perceptions of clinical trials, talk a little bit about the barriers to participation and what will motivate them to participate in clinical trials in the future. So we found out that overall participants had limited knowledge about clinical trials. I mean, many of them had heard about it, but they really didn't know what it was, and there were a lot of misperceptions. So we had a female participant say, you know, I've heard about clinical trials, but I honestly don't know what it means. And this was also typical in the men's groups also, like either they had heard about it or they didn't know or they had some misperception about what a clinical trial is. Also, I broke the perceptions down into three areas. So experimental, and usually guinea pig was associated with the experimental part. They perceived it as general research or as prescription drug testing. And I have these ranked by men and women. So for example, men were more likely to perceive clinical trials as something experimental, like them using them as a guinea pig. And this came up very often. So we see a male comment, I asked them, what do you think about clinical trials? What do you perceive the word clinical trials meaning to you? And, you know, they were just like, yeah, they're going to use you as a guinea pig. Also, women ranked general research first. So we have a female participant saying, just medical research, we need more education on the human body, period. So they couldn't give me any specifics, but so we categorize that as them perceiving it as general research. And also with this prescription drug testing, so women usually were like, okay, they perceived it as inventing some type of new medication in some instances. However, men, on the other hand, they may have perceived it as being a process involving prescription drug testing, but it was more so a doctor prescribing medication and them, you know, finding out which dose worked best. So that was the men's perception. So we have a guy saying, I think of, you know, what medicine doctors use, just test medicine if I was going to switch medications. So even though it was we categorize it under prescription drug testing, there was a different perception between men and women. Also, what are some of the barriers? Before, you know, we talked about the literature, mistrust, fear, all of these. These are not new, but we found these in our study also. So the number one barrier amongst men and women was mistrust. And you see here, the Tuskegee experiment, it really warped your thinking to know that your government would do such a thing. So there's still a lot of mistrust in and around, there's still a lot of mistrust in and around, you know, the Tuskegee experiment, something that happened years and years ago. So we still need to work to overcome this mistrust in the community. Also fear, they aren't very knowledgeable about what's going to happen. You're asking them to participate in something, and you're saying the word clinical trial, and they're associating it with things such as the Tuskegee experiment. So they're just, you know, they're fearful. They don't understand exactly what's going on, and I think that is misunderstanding sets up so much fear that shuts them out. They're not even going to think about it. So this was a comment from a female participant when we asked her, why are people participating in your community? Also, time was a factor. A lot of these people, you know, work long hours, and, you know, sometimes we aren't as flexible as we need to be. So this person says, a couple of times I could have participated, but I was taking care of my mother, so they have family obligations. Also, we asked them, so, okay, what will motivate you or others in your community to participate? And the number one amongst men and women was money. But amongst other things were safety, education, helping someone else, or peer group encouragement. Somebody who's participated before could say, you know, vouch for you saying that it was okay to participate. Also free health care. Some of these people were uninsured, and this would be a wonderful way to, you know, get some free health care or participate in something that could, you know, change the condition of their health. So the results from phase two, which phase two, again, was the quantitative portion before and after the intervention. So most participants, of course, reported never participating in clinical trials. They also reported never being asked for a doctor to participate. The majority of them, you know, either strongly agreed or agreed. Also, 77%, though they were, you know, reported mistrust, things like fear as barriers, 77% reported that they would be open to participating in clinical trials in the future. Men were more likely to report being open to clinical trials participation at pretest than women, so they were more apprehensive, but this kind of, you know, this became better after we had our intervention. And also, this last slide, you know, I've broken down some of the barriers between men and women. We also asked about barriers on our survey. So if we look in the first column, time and transportation were pretty much the two most reported barriers amongst all participants. But if we look at men and women, we can see at pretest, men were more likely to say that they didn't have transportation to attend, you know, a clinical trial, and this is why they did not participate. But at post-test, they said, you know, I really didn't have time. Women, on the other hand, said that they didn't trust the researcher. At post-test, they were more likely to also report time as a barrier. So my main takeaway point here is there are many barriers to participation in clinical trials still after all of this time, but the majority of these barriers were at the patient level. So that means, you know, fear, mistrust, time, these were issues at the patient level, not the institution level. And I think that these will be, you know, easier to approach than at an institution level. So therefore, we need to take some of these recommendations that this community has provided us with, take advantage of those, and go out and use these as strategies to, you know, get people to participate not only in clinical trials but also our research. So building trust, things such as awareness, could help us increase this number of the number of African American participants in particular in clinical trials and medical research. So I do want to acknowledge our partners at Spartanburg Regional Gibbs Cancer Center, and this study was supported by a grant from the National Cancer Institute. References. Thank you.